What's the possibility that it was, you know, as we've heard many times over the years in discussing the UFO topic, that if, in fact, there is recovered alien technology tested at Area 51, whatever, that it would have been handed off potentially to private interests as a further buffer from prying eyes like mine, that maybe some multinational corporation would be in control of it now?
Well, as you know, in SS Brotherhood of the Bell, I reproduce a lot of the Magic 12 documents, the so-called Cooper Cantwheel documents, and then analyze them. And one of the documents in that series of documents actually makes that very suggestion or that very claim that around 1968 or 69, President Nixon actually devolved all private and covert ufology projects into corporate hands. So again, as a means or a layer of extra security, that would be very likely. So I don't disagree with you there at all.
Let's talk about the UFO connection.
Sure.
If in fact we have this stuff and it works,
right?
I mean, your premise is that a lot of what we see as UFOs and that people sometimes think of as ET craft,
right,
might be the Bell.
Well, I do believe, you know, let's put it back in the context of some other things concerning the end of the war again. Most of your listeners will be familiar with the fact that there has always been a kind of persistent Nazi flying saucer legend or mythos out there. And if you trace that legend back, it always ends up in a very, very few people, and most of those people have some sort of neo-Nazi connection. And it's never been, to my satisfaction, documented too well. But with the Bell, we have a device whose footprints in history are now clearly visible. And as a result of that, I think that we can probably say that the Bell is indeed the basis for some of that Nazi flying saucer mythology. So it may be that what we're seeing in the skies with many UFO sightings, certainly not all of them, but with some of them, would be a development or a continuation of that technology. But again, as I say, the real question is, did that technology end up here or did it remain in Nazi hands after the war? We really don't know.
Well, the Bell doesn't look like a flying saucer,
right.
So is your suggestion that if, in fact, the technology has been mastered, that we put it into other sleeker-looking craft?
It could possibly very well have been that, yes. Again, the Bell represents a kind of a prototypical technology. It was a device that they were using to test various avenues or various aspects of this physics. So, yes, it would have had to have been sleeked up a bit and tweaked.
But there's at least one famous UFO case that does look like your Bell, right? The Kexburg case.
Right, right. Well, I get into that in Reich of the Black Sun, which is the book that's written prior to SS Brotherhood of the Bell, and then kind of pick up on it again in SS Brotherhood. And when I first made that connection, I just was really kind of dumbfounded because the Kexburg acorn, the thing that crashed in Pennsylvania in 1965, has so many connections to the Nazi Bell on any number of data points. It's described as being in almost the same dimensions. It's described as being almost exactly the same shape. And more importantly, it is described as making a similar sound, a kind of a hissing, buzzing, cracking sound that would indicate, to my mind, a lot of high-voltage electrostatics going on. So, yeah, there's any number of connections to it. And more importantly, when the Kexburg acorn allegedly ends up at Wright-Patterson Air Base, it had to be housed in a room with ceramic brick. So, you know, even to the point of the housing of the Kexburg acorn, we're dealing with a data point that connects directly to the Nazi Bell. So I find it rather interesting.
I guess you have to ask, what the heck were they doing with it if the Kexburg object that crashed out there was the Bell? What the heck were they doing with it, and shouldn't they have been more careful with it?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, and just to speculate a little bit on it, when we look at the map that tracked the course of the Kexburg acorn, it comes down out of Canada and then takes a sharp turn over Ohio and then ends up eventually in the crash field in Pennsylvania. Now, it's interesting to me because there have always been these little post-war allegations that the Nazis had set up some secret bases and test sites and so on in the Canadian Arctic. So it is possible that the Nazis may have tested this thing and it got loose from them again somehow, and our military showed up and picked it up. And I find it very interesting that our military showed up at Kecksburg so quickly after the device crashes. It's almost as if they had been expecting it or wrested control away from it.
Yeah, that's for sure. So you believe the MJ-12 documents in general are legit?
Well, that's another good question. I don't really get into questions of authenticity in the two books, and the reason why is that I'm more concerned with examining the internal evidence of the documents themselves and the technology that they describe. And what I kind of conclude in Reich of the Black Sun and then later in SS Brotherhood of the Bell is that the technology that the documents describe is not, to my way of thinking and my way of approaching the science aspect of it, that the technology is not sophisticated or exotic enough to be Hello?
I can hear you. I'm not sure if I can hear Joseph Farrell. Is that you, Joseph?
Hello?
I think we're having some technical difficulties here, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm not sure how we can fix them. Our guest, Joseph Farrell, I think we've lost him. All right, we're going to take a short break. We're going to take a break and see what we can do to get Joseph Farrell back here. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast. All right, well, the Joseph Farrell, when he comes back, and I hope we'll get him back, wants to establish that there was a relationship between the Nazi Bell Project and Operation Paperclip. We've been speculating on whether or not the technology that he's describing could be confused with a lot of what we see today as UFOs. And I know a lot of this is speculative, that the book in particular draws lines between a lot of seemingly disassociated events. But if you've been listening very closely, Dr. Farrell is making a pretty compelling case by tracing the paper trail dating back to this affidavit from the prisoner of war, this affidavit of SS general who was in charge of the program, indicating that a man named Igor Witkowski is the one who dug up these documents after the unification of Germany, to indicate that this was a real project, that many of the scientists who were working on it were murdered by the SS toward the end of the war to keep it out of American and Russian hands, and that if in fact we developed this technology or stole it from them or acquired it in some way, that perhaps it had been incorporated into America's space program, into military research, and perhaps even after that passed on to the hands of multinational corporations, which is what many people believe happened to UFO technology, recovered ET technology, such as from Roswell and other alleged crashed incidents. Are we going to get back Joseph Farrell? Joseph, I don't know exactly where we were when you when we lost you there, but please continue.
Well, I think we were going in the direction of the MJ-12 documents and the kind of evidence that I was talking about. To my mind, does not the technical and scientific descriptions don't really merit an exotic enough science to be extraterrestrial. If we look at the Magic 12 documents, the part that would seem to point to an extraterrestrial possibility is concerning the biology. And all of that in the documents is blacked out. So on the basis of the extant evidence internal to the documents themselves, I think we have to look to a terrestrial origin. And the only place that I think has an exotic enough science or physics or technology at that time period would be Nazi Germany.